I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. Marissa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am terrific.
Wow. Terrific.
How's that? I am terrific. Just, you know, I feel good. It's got to be the airport gummies.
Not sponsored.
No, airborne gummies. And then there's supplemented with vitamin C capsules. But it's working.
Hey, whatever works.
Exactly. So today I started my post out with a question. Where are the leaders? And I mean, it's no surprise that I want to talk about leadership and leaders, but there is just, I believe that of all the challenges that our world, not just our country, is facing, all of them can be solved with leadership. And I think that most of it is because there is this lack of leadership. I really do. I think that there's just, we're missing the people that can make the difference and bring us together. And we've got groups of people, we've got people in power that are pulling us apart, not drawing us together. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah. You started this post with a really bold statement about, you know, leadership being what you believed is the greatest challenge in the world. And at first I was a little nervous to publish this.
Oh, David's gone off the deep end.
But, you know, I read through what you were saying and, you know, you make some really, really great points. And I think you were, you know, I know you've been reading John Maxwell's new book too.
I have.
And so I'm sure we'll be talking about that today.
Yeah. And that's really what I'd like to do. You know, it lived to lead Marcus Buckingham. He made a statement that was really hard for people to comprehend, especially if you weren't there.
Especially me, who had to ask you to explain it many times.
Because there were a couple emails. Even when I gave you a short synopsis of the chapter or the lie, you still didn't. Anyways, I'm just teasing you. But he said, you know, one of the nine lies we believe about work to be true is that leadership is a thing. And it's not. Leaders are things. Leadership is not. Leadership is a word that describes the behaviors of some people. And the ability to pull people together, to raise people up, to help people, to strengthen people, to add value to people, you know, to move them in the right direction. I mean, that's leadership. But one of the examples that Marcus used at Live to Lead was, he said, take two leaders of the same age, but they're very different. And he used Warren Buffett and Richard Branson. You know, they're completely different people, yet both are tremendous leaders. And so that really gets us to the point. So what are we looking for? Well, we're not looking for a list, a checklist that I can say, well, this and this and this and this is a leader. We're looking for people who have followers. The one thing that's in common with Richard Branson and Warren Buffett is they all have followers. So then, getting back to my premise is, so where are all the leaders? Well, I think the problem is we're not looking for them. And we're perhaps looking the wrong way. And what do I mean by that? I can see where times we kind of, we create this position and then we just take people and stick them into the position rather than first figuring out what really is it that we want. And so what I'd like to do, and I for sure this week, and my guess is at least one more week, maybe two more weeks, is I want to start to introduce our listeners to this great book that John just released. It came out, I think I got it maybe a week and a half ago, and it's called The Leader's Greatest Return. And what John is saying is, I can tell he's getting older because it's almost like he's writing his grandfather advice type of thing. You know, I've told you how to grow your skills. I've told you how to become very intentional about growth. I've told you how to develop yourself. You know, I've taken you down the path of no limits. You know, how you can really blow the doors off your capacity. Now I want you to realize that the greatest return that you can give back is to develop other leaders. Now he's probably going to get all depressed if he hears it and says, Dave thinks I'm going to die. But that's not what I'm saying. But there, you know, there is a point when you get to a certain stage in your life where you start thinking, I don't have as many books that I can write anymore. And I need to make sure I put some real important things down. So what I really want to talk about today is to have us spend a few minutes talking about how do we identify leaders? and where do we find him? And it's not that complicated of a process if we're highly intentional about it. But one of the points I'll never forget that I heard when I, because I have the hard copy that I'm reading, but I was also listening to the audiobook. And one of the things that John says is, you start with many to find one. And that in and of itself is telling me that there's going to be a lot of people that they're not bad people, but they just may not be gifted in leadership. So how do I find that key person? And he was actually referring to something that Andrew Carnegie said when he was talking about there were all these millionaires that became millionaires when they worked for Carnegie. And somebody asked him, you know, how did you find all these millionaires? And he said, well, they weren't millionaires when I found them. They became millionaires by working mm-hmm. for me. Well, how did you find that? And he said, it's kind of like going into a gold mine. He said, you got to dig through a lot of dirt to find a nugget of gold. Now, we're not saying people that aren't leaders are dirt, but there's just this concept of you got to sift through a lot. So what we want to talk about in today's podcast are the 6 A's of identification. And anybody that's read John's stuff knows that John has a ton of acronyms and laws and multiple A's kind of thing. And the first one is the assessment of your needs. What do you need? Now, so let me ask you a question. Do you think that that is an easy or a tough question for an organization to ask? What do we need?
I think that's probably very difficult because it's hard on the personal level to identify uh-huh. what your mission or vision might be, but then to take that to a much larger organization with a lot of opinions and
right.
of course there are objectives which yeah. are a little bit different. And so I think it's a great place to start. I think that's where you need to start. But I'm sure that's a challenging thing to do.
It is. And I think, Marissa, I believe that if we can identify well enough what it is we're looking for, mm-hmm. the finding becomes the easy part. And so we, you know, John says that, you know, assessment of your needs, what's your vision? What's your mission? So what's the vision of the company? Excuse me, what's the mission of the company? And then he says, so what do you need to accomplish your vision and what do you need to accomplish your mission? So, and this part here, you know, actually, I think all 6 of these, maybe not the 6th, the first 5 are all things that we could use whenever we're looking to place a new hire,
mm-hmm.
to have a new hire.
So explain how you figure out like this, okay, what do you need to accomplish your vision? Like on what level, I guess?
Okay, great question. So, and this is going to fall into the, brace yourself for this, the law of attraction. Okay. And so what I want to say is this way. So if I know what my vision is for my organization or my department, and I know what the mission is. So now I'm going to have to ask myself, looking at my team, what's missing? Looking at the people that the organization is made up of. So let's say I'm looking for a department lead, you know, or something. So what are the people like in that department? What mm-hmm. what are the skill sets that are needed in that department? What do I really think this person needs to be like to accomplish the mission and the vision and the mission? If you know, when I was running a manufacturing company and we need to buy a piece of machinery, what are the requirements that machine has to be able to produce? And then you just start checking them off. So I want to share with you this. So as I was going through this, the first time I saw this, I was hearing it. I didn't see it in the book. I heard it. And so there's a gentleman, Bob Taylor, who owns Taylor Guitars. And I don't know anything about guitars, but apparently, at least at one point, this company produced 40% of all of the acoustic guitars in America. And Bob was in his, according to the book, upper 50s, trying to figure out What do I do next? Who's going to fill in my organ? Who's going to fill my shoes? And so this was the list of exactly what he was looking for. And as you listen to this list, tell me if it sounds crazy to you.
Okay.
I need one guitar maker who is a better guitar builder than me, who is self-taught, that didn't learn how to do it by working in another factory, who's a pro guitar player and can play with anybody at the drop of a hat, could do it on stage, whatever, who's a great person, who won't get into this 15 years and then screw up his life and have to start over, who knows the history of guitars, knows how to make guitars, and get this, he needs to have 20 years of experience, but be less than 30 years old.
Huh.
Oh, and he has to be from San Diego.
Wow.
So as you listen to that list, I mean, what was the one thing that didn't make sense or that seemed hardest to believe? Which isn't fair because you don't have the list in front of you.
To be less than 30 years old with 20 years of experience.
Exactly. Yeah. And as I'm listening to this, the first time I'm like, this is absurd. And now as I read it, it still is absurd. But Bob Taylor wrote these things out as he contemplated the position he was trying to fill. He had it in his desk. He would pick it out and look at it, put it away. Pick it out, take it out, look at it, put it away. A year later, he is at a show, the NAMM show, where they had a recording studio where they were, this is like some music industry show. There's a young guy who had his own custom guitar company. Some group needed a guitar player, so he's playing to help him do this recording. Bob introduces himself to him, finds out that, in fact, this young man is 28 years old. He started building custom guitars when he was 8. When he built his first guitar. Everything, and by the way, he lived in North San Diego County. So it sounds like it's not real. But if we think about that, the thing about if you really know what you want and you're looking for it and you're aware of what's around you, you will begin to see the resources.
Mm-hmm.
So what I got from this was, what is it exactly that we're looking for in this new hire or to fill this position? Right down to what kind of person are they, and the age thing. So why did he pick on somebody that age? He wanted someone with longevity that could stay with the organization longer. That's what I gather from the story in the book. But he wanted 20 years experience, and he wanted somebody that didn't learn guitar building from another company, but that literally developed it on his own. So as I looked at that lesson, I thought, this is a perfect example for anybody filling any position. Because if we don't know what we want, how will we know where to find it? So that part is the assessment of the needs. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to get that detailed. And I will tell you that from reading this part in the book, I will never, ever make a hire again without a list like this. Because you all of a sudden realize, so what happens is we'll make a hire and then we realize, oh, this isn't the person that we thought, or this isn't the person that fits the needs. Now, that doesn't mean they're not a good person. It just might mean they're not in the right position. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the needs part. And then assets on hand. So now the first thing that you should do, you should always do this first, is look inside your organization. The reason that Bob Taylor didn't was he wanted some additional guitar building skills. And he actually said that by bringing in this new young man, he upped the quality and the uniqueness of the guitars that Taylor was making, because this kid was really, really good. So, but we look inside our organization. Is there, so what's the benefit? You already know him.
Right.
If they're there and they're working, they're probably a good employee and they understand the culture and they fit. They also, so this is something that you can look for, and I think a lot of people miss this. So John's phrase is, leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. If you're especially trying to find a leader within your organization, you have to figure out who has influence. and I was at a company a week ago, 2 weeks ago, excuse me, and this question came up. You know, we've made some promotions, we've made some hires, and to put people in leadership positions, and they were great producers, but they couldn't lead. And they asked me, is there a way for us to identify leaders before we give them the job? And I, you know, I thought for a moment and I said, yeah, there really is. They said, why couldn't you have a project team? It could be a group that does volunteer work in your community, whatever. Give people an opportunity to lead a group of people that they don't have line oversight over. Because if you can get people to do something without having authority over them, mm-hmm. they're a leader.
Yep.
It was one of those, all of us just kind of looked at one of those aha moments because I had never thought of that. But it's true. Just give somebody, if somebody can lead a volunteer group, they can lead anything. Because the people have to want to do it for the leader. The leader's obviously influencing them enough to want to follow them. And then, so, you know, assets. So that's the assets on hand. And maybe we don't have anybody on hand. So then what we have to do is we have to look outside the organization. And if somebody, Marissa, asked you, hey, how do I find people within the Central New York manufacturing community? What advice would you give them?
How to find people within the Central New York? Well, of course, come to MACNE.
Exactly. And I did not prep you for this question.
No, but we have a handful of resources now, especially with our career and talent platform, which it would be something you could do right from your computer or come to some of our networking events or our annual dinner, big events like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you never know, too. Like, building relationships with people through networking, it's like they might not be someone that you need right now, but down the road, you could say, hey, what do we need? What are we missing?
Oh, exactly.
I know someone who would be perfect for the job.
Exactly. And, you know, the job that I got at SelfLock was because I went to Factory Management Council meetings at MACNE, and Dan Koons, who was the son-in-law of the owner at the time, he and I became friends. We would see each other once a month. For a while, he was the chair of the Factory Management Council, and I was the vice chair. Mm-hmm. We started talking, and the next thing I knew, one of his advisory board members was calling me, asking me if I wanted to go work there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's that's how you find people. You go to where the types of people are that you're looking for.
Right.
If you don't have that list, if you haven't taken the time to create the picture, the mental picture, or the written list of what it is you're looking for, they could be right next to you and you don't know it. So to me, that was just this huge thing that jumped out of this chapter. Mm-hmm. So you go to MACNE events, you go, and so, you know, we have listeners in, I think it's 12 or 14 countries, I forgot which, but go to places where the people gather that talk about the things you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So that's looking for people that, if we don't have them in-house. So let's look now at the attitude one. I think this was a key, you know, are they willing? And this was not something that was new to me. Delta Airlines said, you know, we hire for attitude, we train for aptitude. I've said for years, you hire for attitude, you train for skill. Some of my best employees, my best hires over the years were people that I didn't hire to do what they ended up doing. Mm-hmm. I hired them because they were great people and I've discovered this energy level with them. They were the kind of people I wanted to work with. And excuse me, it ended up that they had everything I needed because so when you get the attitude, because that's the hardest thing, excuse me. Maybe I need another airborne gummy. The hardest thing for us to do is to get people to truly buy into our culture. And so you hire people that fit your culture.
Right.
So that's the attitude piece. And then are they able? You know, somebody can have the greatest attitude in the world, but they're just not able to lead. They, for whatever reason, perhaps it's a behavior profile that that they just are extreme on a on an introverted area and don't just can't get out of their comfort zone enough. Well, that doesn't mean they're not a good hire. It just means they're not a good hire for leadership.
Right.
The reason why I'm kind of rushing is I want to get to the sixth one here, which is look for builders. And what John is saying is we want accomplishments. We're looking for the accomplishments that the potential leader has made, and have they produced results? And I don't know why it seems to be hitting me more at this age, but I don't have a lot of patience with people that want a position or a title and don't want to deliver the results.
Mm-hmm.
It just, for me, it frustrates me. Maybe it's because as I'm getting older, I realize I got less time. You know, if when you realize, oh my goodness, I don't have as many years left as I thought, let's get busy. So some things that we're going to notice about builders. Builders are seldom satisfied. And in some ways, people are going to say, well, wait a minute, that's a person that's going to be a real pain to try to control. You're absolutely right, they are. But we shouldn't be controlling them. We should be giving them the challenge, giving them the vision, helping them see the mission, and letting them build. They love results, so they're all about getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
And not just metrics of checking a box. They want to see results. They want to see tangible results. This was another one I found interesting. Builders are comfortable with uncertainty. That had me wondering, am I a builder? Because I don't like uncertainty. But I think what builders do is they're fine with not knowing exactly what it is has to happen. Builders are impatient. And this one I did appreciate and agree with. Builders are contagious. You know, we love to be around people that are passionate. And builders are passionate. They get so excited about what's going on. I had this neat opportunity a week ago. My son Mike is a construction manager for a company in Syracuse. And one of the neat things in Syracuse, and I think it's happening all over the country, but these buildings downtown that are past what we would say their normal use, and people would in the past would have just torn them down, they're not. You know, they're these young entrepreneurs in Syracuse that are buying up these buildings and finding ways to convert them into apartment buildings and mixed-use buildings where there's apartments and offices and retail. And it was just so exciting. I said, I saw it on Instagram, and I quickly sent a text to Mike. I said, hey, Mike, is this one of the buildings that you're working on? Because I recognized the developer's name. And he goes, yeah, it is. So we met for lunch, and then he gave me a tour of these three buildings. And, you know, when you're around a builder, and you hear him talking about what they're doing and how they're doing it and why they're doing it, and they show you the uniqueness of these buildings, it's contagious.
Mm-hmm.
You just get so excited about it. So when you're around a person that's passionate and contagious, or passionate and excited, it's contagious, and you just want to jump in. You know, I started thinking, wow, I don't need an office, but this would be a really cool place to have an office. You know, and it's a good thing I don't need one, because I probably would be signing up for a rent payment that I don't need. But that's this last piece.
Yeah.
If we're looking for leaders, find people that are getting something done and bring them on your team. Another thing that I said to somebody once is I said, you know, the person that you want for a leadership position is working. And they're like, well, how can I get them? Because the reality is that if they're a really energetic, go-getting kind of person, they're going to continually be looking for opportunities. And they won't be sitting at home waiting for somebody to ring the doorbell or call them up on the phone. They're out there beating the bushes, finding it, getting it done. So I said, you have to find a way to penetrate those organizations that have leaders in them. And like you said, it's MACME events. It's different social events. It's going to trade events and just working with people and finding out what they're doing and just asking them what excites them. And when you get that information going, you're going to find your leaders. So I know I did a ton of talking on this one again, but I got excited about it. So the six A's: assessment of your needs, identify it, write it down, every little thing that you can think of that you're looking for in that person, put it down on paper and look at the paper frequently. Identify for yourself again your vision, your mission. Make sure it's clear enough that you can articulate it and what skill sets are needed to meet that. First, check, do you have those assets on hand? Are there people in your organization? You know, if not, go outside. Look for their attitude and their ability. And lastly, their accomplishments. And if you look at these areas and give your people a try, give them a test drive in leadership. Give them the opportunity to do something that is just based on or where they have to lead a volunteer organization or a committee or a project. And see if they can do it. If they can lead people that don't have line authority feeding back to them, they can lead. Anything I said didn't make sense that you want to challenge me on?
No, I think, you know, I think it's a lot to process.
It is.
And to think about, it's almost like shifting a lot of the existing thoughts that we have on hiring into these positions.
Yes. Yes.
And I imagine that we'll be talking more about this next week.
We will. So, you know, what I'm thinking right now is just to kind of work our way through some of the key points in the book. And I think next week we're going to talk about, you know, how do we attract them? You know, once we found them, how do we, you know, what can we do that will get these people to want to come? And I think also, you know, what do we need to do to, what might lie in the way or what might get in the way of us being able to really get them to buy in kind of thing. So I think that's what I'll work on for next week, and we'll see what happens the week after that.
Great.
And that's it.
All right. To be continued.
To be continued. And I don't think there's anything else. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to. I'm going to make... They're going to have to wait for next. They're going to have to wait for next week.
All right.
For that little bit of information. I'm holding on to it for another week.
Okay.
So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.